Hello, I'm Dr. Ciara Kelly, and you are very welcome to Beyond Expectations. So let's talk psoriasis. This is a four-part series where we're looking at all things to do with psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis. And we're going to be trying to share with you the important and practical information that you need as somebody living with one of those conditions. Today, this is our final episode, and we're talking today about psoriatic arthritis, which is a condition that affects about 30% of people who have psoriasis. And I am delighted to be joined by Eamon Byrne, who is a Dublin-based guard and an Irish paracyclist who is living with psoriatic arthritis. I'm joined by Gráinne O'Leary, who is the Chief Executive of Arthritis Ireland, and Professor Doug Veal, who is Consultant Rheumatologist at St Vincent's University Hospital and Professor of Medicine at UCD. You're all very welcome. I'm delighted to have you here today. And psoriatic arthritis, it's one of those things that is quite hard, despite being relatively common among people who have psoriasis. It's relatively difficult to diagnose, and people tend to get a diagnosis a reasonably long time after their symptoms present. And I'd like to kind of get into that. But before we do, could I ask you, Doug, will you just, I suppose, explain to people what exactly it is?
Sure. So it's a form of inflammatory arthritis. So the joints become inflamed. The back often becomes inflamed. In patients who have psoriasis, as you said, I think 30% of patients with psoriasis. So that, in my calculation, would say about 30,000 people in Ireland would suffer from psoriatic arthritis. And it's not just an arthritis, because it affects the obviously the skin psoriasis, the nails. It also can affect the areas where the muscles and the tendons actually attach to the joints. So these areas, like the Achilles tendon inserts into the heel. So these areas, which can become very inflamed. And then the fingers and the toes can also become inflamed throughout their, if you like, the whole sort of finger or toe can become inflamed. So it has lots of different presentations, which adds to the complexity of the disease, and also why sometimes patients are reluctant to attend a doctor, or even maybe will attend the wrong type of specialist, and therefore the diagnosis doesn't get made, because all of these areas don't seem to be clicked together.
By wrong type of specialist, do you mean that they go off and see an orthopaedic person or a neurosurgeon or something totally different?
A pain specialist or an orthopaedic surgeon. And thankfully, a lot of our colleagues now will refer those patients into us or into the dermatologist, and the dermatologists and the rheumatologists are referring much more readily to each other as well. So I think that the time to the delay to diagnosis has certainly come down in the last 10 years.
And Eamon, you're obviously living with the condition, and you were only diagnosed, I think, 2019, which is relatively recently. How did it present for you? What were you experiencing?
Pain. I had predominantly back pain, lower back pain. And it was something at the time, Doug touched on it there, I'd seen pain specialists, I got facet joint injections, I was taking anti-inflammatories, and I think that had been going on for years without really understanding. I just thought I had back pain, and nobody really explained to me that, you know, maybe I could have had arthritis. And it was only now in retrospect that I was dealing with a whole other host of pains, and those things, I mean, since my diagnosis, those I don't have any of the other pains. I sometimes have a low level of back pain, but I don't get the same flare-ups that I would have had. I don't have the same kind of fatigue and illnesses that I would have, you know.
Was fatigue a big part of it?
Yeah. Now, I work night shifts, and I would have always just assumed that's why I had, you know, symptoms of fatigue. At the same time, I always looked at, you know, my colleagues who didn't suffer the same sort of levels of fatigue, and I just put it down to being a bad sleeper, which, you know, arguably I am, but that fatigue is gone now. And so I know that it was all part of the same.
So you were putting it all down to the job and your lifestyle. You were kind of making explanations in your head for this thing.
Had you
ever heard of psoriatic arthritis?
Never, no. My brother, growing up, my brother had psoriasis. I knew what psoriasis was, but I just thought it was a skin condition. And
you didn't have psoriasis?
I don't think so. My parents don't think so. I think I had a touch of eczema, which possibly was psoriasis when I was growing up. But I never would have, you know, had to be treated for it. I never would have had to, you know.
So you didn't think of yourself as somebody?
No, yeah. No. It really surprised me.
And Doug, does that add to the complications around
absolutely
diagnosis? Because we kind of, 30% of people.
Yes.
But then you have people who don't even have the psoriasis, yes, or aren't aware that they have,
yes,
psoriasis.
So there's two things, I guess, I'd say there. You could have the arthritis before you have the psoriasis, although it's not the most common way in which the disease presents. But also, we do see patients now, and that's recognised in the sort of classification criteria that doctors use for psoriatic arthritis now, that if you have a family history of psoriasis, then that is an additional factor which we take into account when to make the diagnosis.
And is it different for, you know, particularly for people maybe, one of the great things about this series is it is hard to get to see a consultant and it is hard to get kind of information. But is it the case that psoriatic arthritis is different to other arthritis for people who are kind of going, what do I actually have and how is it affecting me? Is it different to other types?
Yes, it is different. And I think it's because it's got all these different facets of these different clinical features. And of course, one patient with psoriatic arthritis may have a completely different set of features. Their disease is very different to perhaps, you know, the next person who has psoriatic arthritis. And so for that reason, you know, everybody's very different and people present with different symptoms.
Yeah. And Gráinne, I'm sure people who come to Arthritis Ireland looking for information, this is one of the types of arthritis that they have. What do you say to people? What should they be looking out for or what kind of things should they be aware of if they're having symptoms?
Well, I think, first of all, it's kind of joining the dots on those symptoms. I mean, Doug and Eamon have described kind of the myriad of symptoms that people can have. And particularly with psoriatic arthritis, what we find is that, you know, it can be quite a very different experience to, for example, rheumatoid arthritis, which would be more common. And probably people may have a bit more of an understanding of what that is. So generally, people are having kind of different symptoms. It's kind of, you know, pain in different parts of the body. Doug even mentioned the things like the nail changes that you wouldn't always think of. I mean, people, when they hear the word arthritis, you know, they think of joint problems and they think of pain. And pain is that number one symptom still. However, kind of that unexplained fatigue as well that Eamon talked about. I mean, people would say to us that sometimes they can handle the pain, but actually that overwhelming fatigue that unless you've ever experienced it can be just one of those things that's really, really hard to manage because, you know, your normal activities, your daily activities of living can just come to a halt and can just be really, really difficult to undertake.
Wouldn't necessarily think that was arthritis. That's part of the problem, isn't it?
I think when people sometimes hear then that this form of arthritis is an autoimmune disease, and when you think about what an autoimmune disease is, it's something, you know, that's not quite working in your immune system. So, you know, I think then it becomes, people can understand it a little bit better.
Was it helpful to you, Eamon, to have a diagnosis so that you could actually explain what you, because obviously it was interfering with your life. As you say, you were tired all the time, you had pain, you were attending different types of specialists. So you were obviously looking for a solution because it must have been impacting on you. Was it helpful to kind of go, oh, I'm not just a hypochondriac. I'm not somebody who all my colleagues are tired, but for some reason I cope with it less well than other people. Was it kind of a helpful thing to actually be told, no, this is what you have and this is what we're going to do?
Yeah, for me, it answered a lot of questions. And even now it still does. Even just listening to some, like, I never considered, like, my nails before. No one ever mentioned that. Now that I think back, I did have, like, deformation of my nails. Or, like, I remember going to see my consultant and he asked me, you know, how are my feet? And I said, my feet are fine. And they weren't fine at all. My feet were actually really painful when I realised when he stuck his thumb in my foot. Like, you know,
So you were kind of minimising to yourself were experiencing.
And you know, it's still, even now, like, if I don't stay on top of, you know, my mobility, for example, you know, I really tighten up, like, and
stiffness.
Those are things that I try not to let happen anymore. Whereas before, you know, I would have gone through phases of inactivity or, you know, maybe easing off a little bit too much.
So you're self-managing your condition because you know what you have.
So
is
much
that
better.
Fair to
and
say?
I know what sleep means to me now. more than I would have before. Everyone knows we're supposed to sleep and get a good night's sleep and rest and recover. But I know now if I don't stay on top of that, that I'm probably asking for a flare-up or I'm asking for pain. And it's enough for me to go, well, it's not worth it, like, you know. Whereas before, I wouldn't have known I was even doing that. And a flare-up had happened and it was because I was inactive.
It's not an insult, but you were a young man as well. And I don't necessarily think that that group pay huge amounts of attention to their health.
You know what? I think you're not
still a young man.
I think it's okay. I'm okay with being called a young man from before. I think you get away with it more then too. Like,
you do.
And I would not get away with it now. But if I had the same knowledge now that I had years ago, I wouldn't try and get away with it, you know.
And on that note, Doug, the managing it, and particularly managing the flares, people often look for triggers or maybe are aware of triggers. How should somebody out there watching this today who has this condition, how should they manage their flares and what should they be wary of in terms of triggers?
Yeah, so I think when you're having a flare, essentially what we mean is that the disease is active and there's inflammation. Your immune system is activated and it's actually affecting your whole body. Now, the fatigue is a feature, the stiffness is a feature, and you can see then increase in pain in the joints and lack of sleep and all of these other factors, which are sort of secondary in a sense to the inflammation. So what we say is you should rest if your joints are inflamed. If you're taking regular exercise, perhaps just dial it back a little bit, you know, reduce your amount of exercise. Certainly weight-bearing exercise, so walking or running, is not to be advised during a flare. And so just, you know, take it a little bit easier, rest up a little bit, and actually take painkillers when you have pain. You know, people are very reluctant to take painkillers a lot of the time. And you hear, you know, they get worried about, you know, addiction and various other factors. But, you know, if you have pain, we say take a painkiller, take an anti-inflammatory if you need it. Now, thankfully, the medications we have for controlling the disease and reducing flares are really much, much better now than they were 20 years ago.
And would you echo that, Gráinne, that when people come to you,
pain medication is part of you know, the treatment plan for arthritis, and you know, very often people do need to take painkillers, and sometimes it's not taking the strongest of painkillers either, but I suppose it's that thing about treating pain early, that, you know, if you get on top of pain before it gets too bad, you'll have a better outcome and be able to resume your normal activities, whereas it can be harder to get on top of pain when it gets really bad.
Yeah.
So that's one of the messages we would always give to people as
well.
So
get in there, don't wait till your pain is more severe.
Yeah.
We've touched on treatments, and treatments have really improved. Doug, obviously there's a sort of a spectrum of treatment.
Yes, sure.
Would you like to kind of outline where people might start and where they might end up in terms of treatment?
Yeah, so commonly, I guess, because the psoriasis will, in most cases, the psoriasis will be present before the arthritis, people will start with topical treatments, so creams and lotions and potions. And then there's tablet treatments, which have been around for a long time, and some of them are very effective for some people. And now the more recent, in the last 20 years, a lot of the injection type treatments have really been a game changer, essentially. They have changed so that they both control the inflammation, they reduce a lot of the symptoms, but importantly, they also prevent damage to the joints. And as a rheumatologist, we're always really looking at that sort of prevention of future damage. And we do still tend to sort of start with the tablet treatments first and then move on to the injections. But occasionally, in very severe cases, we might combine the tablets and the injections at the same time from the beginning, particularly in a younger person, to try and prevent that damage.
And are you now, I presume probably like everything else in medicine, initially the injectables would have been kind of kept back a little bit and sort of held in reserve. Are we quicker to use those now? Or are we quicker to progress, I suppose, and if you go on a tablet of some kind, and you're not getting huge benefit or huge impact, you just kind of go, oh, do you know what? Okay, it's time to move on. Are we seeing people progress through the types of treatment a little bit more quickly now than we used to?
I think we are. And one of the challenges, I think, for medicine is trying to, can we identify those patients who are going to be at most risk of their disease progressing and damage accruing? So if we can identify those people at a really early stage, then we can say, yeah, these are the patients who really do need early intervention with the injectable treatments. And they don't need a delay in trying other treatments.
Was that your experience, Eamon, of treatment, that you started with one thing and was like, move from A to B to C?
So I was kind of already taking anti-inflammatories and painkillers, I guess self-treating though, like that was just the treatment.
Were they impacting or not impacting on your symptoms?
I found once I had flared up, it didn't really make any difference. And we had, when I was initially diagnosed, it was, I was given anti-inflammatories also, it was a different type, and they did help. But then I found, again, I had a high pressure week, it was a race week, and I could do nothing. I had physiotherapy every day on hand, I had painkillers, I had anti-inflammatories, and it just made no difference.
Whereas just like your body wasn't working.
It just, that was it. Like it decided, you know, that I was going to be in pain that week regardless.
Very hard.
Yeah, yeah. I for me, because I had already been diagnosed and I'd been given, you know, this medication, for me, I thought, well, that's it. I'm good to go now. And that was my first experience of going, oh, actually, I'm not good to go here. And we had a chat when I came back, and that was it. I was put on the biologics.
Okay. And was that a game changer for you?
Complete, yeah. Now, it took a while, but it is and was, like, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, like, I can't explain the difference. I don't have flare-ups. I don't have flare-ups anymore. So if I have, you know, pains and, you know, mobility restrictions, I think it's something that maybe is already existing. They're not going to go away. But I don't have that extreme debilitating flare-up pain.
You're not seizing up anymore.
Yeah, it stops me doing things, it stops me, you know, training, or it stops me exercising, whereas before.
And I'm really glad you mentioned exercise, because obviously you're a paracyclist, and I had to ask you before we started this, mm-hmm. what exactly is a paracyclist? So you are on a tandem bike with somebody who's visually impaired,
yeah,
and so that one of you can see, and then you both cycle. So it sounds a fabulous thing. Is that exercise, it's obviously, Doug mentioned weight-bearing exercise, like running and walking can be a problem. Is that exercise working really well for you in terms of, obviously it gives you exercise, but it's not causing you problems?
I guess I'm on the very extreme end of that. Like, you know, it's good to
you are
know.
The totally wrong person to get psoriatic arthritis.
So I am, and I think, like, I it's great, people should walk and swim and cycle, but nobody should do what I'm doing, because not if you're trying to control and manage your symptoms. Yeah, I listened when you said earlier on about, you know, you should like reduce the low bearing, but I never had the opportunity because you can't slow down, you can't ease off. But I find now that even now, if I take a time off, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, everything creeps back in.
Stiffness.
Yeah, even so, even
so
now.
Exercise.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah. Exercise is part of the treatment, isn't it?
In
terms of mobility and stiffness.
Yeah, for all forms of arthritis, I think. Yeah. You know, it's important that the muscles stay strong, because the muscles really support the joints. And if you and part of the inflammation often will reduce muscle strength, and people lose muscle bulk actually when they have a lot of inflammation. So it's important that you know the type of exercise is important. So we do think either swimming in a pool or walking in a pool or cycling, non-weight bearing is better because it takes the strain out of the joints while you can actually still build up the muscles.
Okay, so and
doing something you like.
This must be something you hear all the
time,
Glenn.
Yes, it's one of the, I mean, you know, there's probably, you know, if you look at it from a in terms of, you know, non-pharmacological approaches to dealing with and managing arthritis, there's two things. One is exercise and the other is weight management. Okay. And they go hand in hand. And of course, many people are, you know, recommended to, you know, become more physically active. But that's really difficult too. And look, we hear this all of the time. If you're in pain, sometimes the thing that you feel least likely to feel like doing is exercising. And also, it almost feels like the wrong thing to do, because you feel maybe exercise is going to cause more pain. So, I mean, one of the things we encourage people to do is start where you're at, because obviously people, we encounter all types of people with all types of diagnosis. And as Eamon said, you know, he's at the extreme end of the support. He's living with psoriatic arthritis. Equally, we will get people coming to us with psoriatic arthritis who've never exercised in their life. And now they're being, you know, recommended or encouraged to exercise.
There is a kind of a vicious circle here, isn't it? Like, yes. you're saying, keep your weight down.
Yeah.
But they're in pain when they exercise. And so most of us, when we're in pain with something, people will say to you, that's the body telling me to avoid it. And so you can kind of understand why people are going, I don't know how to manage my weight if I can't exercise, but if I exercise, I'm in pain, you know, and it creates a kind of a problem.
Yeah. I think the first thing is to make a plan to start, you know, to kind of start where you're at. So if you're not physically active, you know, one of the things we would always encourage people to do is, you know, link in with either a consultant or their GP to have that initial discussion, and perhaps even seek the support of a chartered physiotherapist about where to start. I mean, one of the things is always to start with something that you might actually like doing. So if you've never gone to a gym in your life, it's unlikely that might be the successful journey for you to engaging in physical activity. But maybe if you are able to, you know, start with a gentle walk, or, you know, we would have lots of people who contact us and say that even gentle exercise and movement in their local swimming pool or walking in their pool. Like I have a person who, you know, her feet are really badly damaged by her arthritis, but actually she wears quite a supportive pair of old runners in the pool and she will engage in physical activity. The buoyancy helps take some of the weight.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's finding those things that a person
to
might
find something
might,
you like.
Yeah, and just start small.
We used to say when I was in general practice that movement is medicine with arthritis. That you sort of have to see it as part of the...
Yeah, it's part of your treatment plan.
Yeah, the lexicon of things that you use, because it's important to both of you and all three of you maybe. Is diet part of this? Do we have to look at diet as well? People certainly have it in their heads that certain foods trigger things, and whether that's true or not.
Along with exercise, diet is probably one of the other questions or areas that we get a lot of questions about. Look, I think so many books and articles have been written over many decades about the role of diet and the role of food in the management of arthritis. I mean, I'll let Doug speak to, you know, the different foods and the myths around some of that. But in general, what we would encourage people to adopt is a healthy, you know, healthy, well-balanced diet, because, you know...
So not a fad diet.
Not a fad diet. You know, you know, learning... I suppose learning about what a healthy diet is, if you feel you haven't been following a healthy diet, there's no one diet that's going to, it's not going to solve your arthritis, it's not going to cure you, but it is about feeding your body while you're, particularly when you're newly diagnosed and you're, you know, you're engaging in new treatment, eating healthily is part of that. You know, you need to feed your body so that you're able to deal with the challenges that this disease...
Yeah, because you're supporting your whole body, I suppose. But I know, Doug, I have had patients swear to me that tomatoes kick up a flare-up, or yeast is another one people have said to me many, many times. Is there truth in those things?
It's very hard to get evidence, scientific evidence. And, you know, the researchers will say, you know, there's no evidence in the literature, or nobody can really pin down tomatoes or citrus fruits or...
Is it possible that on an individual basis these are triggers, though?
And I often say to patients, I say, look, you know, if you find something that triggers off your arthritis... I had a lovely patient, actually, a gentleman who attended me for many, many years, and he used to come in and say, if I have one square of chocolate, he said, I'm in agony. And he said, I know that it's going to set off my arthritis. But, you know, I love chocolate.
swings roundabout.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, so that's the sort of thing. And I say to patients, look, if you identify something in your diet that is going to trigger your arthritis, then you just avoid it as much as you can, you know.
Yeah.
But there's nothing you can generalize. And it's one of the most common questions I get is about diet.
So in the same way, symptoms are relatively individual, potentially.
Yes.
I'm not trying to be sort of, you know, flaky on it, but potentially triggers could be individual too. So if somebody does recognise that alcohol or whatever it might be is an issue for them, then they should. Moving it on a little bit, the conversation in general, Gráinne, somebody who has psoriatic arthritis, particularly if they have the skin manifestations and the stiffness and the pain, like we've touched on, how it can be very difficult in terms of taking exercise, very difficult maybe in terms of your fatigue, going to work and stuff. But it also has an impact on things like personal relationships, your marriage, or maybe if you aren't married, dating and things like that. Do you have advice for people who maybe feel a bit low, I suppose, about the fact that they are dealing with this and it's impacting on them, and maybe that impact is quite far reaching?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the really important aspects of living with arthritis. I mean, I think a lot of the focus tends to be on the physical manifestations, you know, in terms of the pain. But it is very much, you know, a disease that impacts a person at an emotional level as well, and a mental health, you know. So, and they're often the things that people can really struggle with. It does bring change into a person's life, and not only into that individual's life, but to their loved ones, you know, around them as well.
So if they're lucky to have loved ones. Yes, you know what I mean? If you haven't started down the path with a loved one yet, having a chronic disease often makes you feel, well, that's me ruled out of the mix for that kind of thing now. That's a thing.
I mean, I think we always what I would always encourage people to do is, first of all, you know, if you are, you know, in terms of close family and friends, is to open up communication channels. So, you know, not to be afraid to speak about how it is impacting you. So to have that kind of openness. So if you are in a relationship, you know, if you have a family, you know, to really, I suppose, because they need to be educated too about how it's impacting you, but also how they can help. And even if you're not in a relationship, you know, in terms of your family, and even it can be things like work colleagues, you know, to actually, you know, to encourage people to express what is actually how they're experiencing their symptoms, their disease. And people often in a person's circle want to help, but they don't know how. So sometimes when you're the person living with the condition, you need to be the person saying, this is how you can help me.
Yeah, that's fair. And would that resonate with you? I don't want to ask you too many personal questions, Emma, but you know what I mean? That kind of impact, never mind just on you taking part in exercise or on your career or whatever, but on intimate relationships and personal relationships, if you're in pain and tired all the time, or maybe a bit irritable, or maybe sometimes people are even a bit low, or their confidence is affected, those types of things.
I think looking back, I had more of those moments than I knew, like, you know, like where I was like, just felt at my wit's end, where you're kind of just downtrodden, like, why am I just in pain, you know? And you've taken your painkillers, you've done everything you're supposed to do, exercising, you know, and I'm eating well and still in pain. It's very hard to accept that, you know? And looking back, I just got on with it and I thought, geez, you know, like, and if you talk to some people without the diagnosis and you say, I have a bad back, you know, and that's it. And people just kind of sometimes don't realise what that is, you know, he just has a bad back. But
it's actually really unfair because you're there with pain in your feet and pain in your back and everything and minimising it and trying to get on and trying to ignore it. Yeah. And other people may be looking at you thinking, I have a bad back too, and I'm not exaggerating like him. So you're nearly categorised as being dramatic when you're actually underplaying it all the time.
I think only maybe some of my family members would have, you know, seen me like struggling to get out of bed, like, or you know, not able to put socks on, or like being in such pain that, you know, you're hobbling and limping and stuff.
And that's really important because arthritis can't be seen
unless
it's really having a severe impact on your mobility.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things about psoriasis and arthritis and psoriatic arthritis that I would say it's often a double whammy, because patients who have got bad psoriasis, they have, you know, almost a double dose of that sort of, you know, anxiety and, you know, maybe depression or low mood associated. So they feel they look bad because they're psoriasis, but they also feel bad on the inside because they can't move. So they're getting almost a double dose.
And so the confidence thing must be a feature, and the stress, and stress, of course, sometimes flares these things up too. So it is a kind of a chicken and egg. Can I ask you lastly, because I know we have questions from like viewers and we want to put them to you, but lastly, just in terms of fertility and pregnancy and young women who might be experiencing this, is there anything special that they should know, Doug?
Absolutely. So, the first thing they should know is we've started a clinic about 7 years ago in the National Maternity Hospital in Holles Street for young women, because obviously inflammatory arthritis and psoriatic arthritis is no exception, affects predominantly younger women in their reproductive years. So a lot of people who suffer from arthritis are planning a family or in the midst of having a family. So and the most important thing I would say is get the disease under control. So treat the disease and get it under control, reduce the activity of the inflammation before you actually plan your family. And planning is important. So before you conceive, get the disease under control as much as possible. Flares are not as common as we used to think during pregnancy. It's usually after the pregnancy that actually a flare is maybe more likely to happen. And the other thing is that a lot of the newer treatments are very safe now during pregnancy. So we would advise most women who have inflammatory arthritis to actually continue on their treatment, because if the mum is healthy and well during pregnancy, they're more likely to have a healthy, well baby.
So guys, we did ask some people who are living with psoriatic arthritis what they would like to ask you as experts on this. So we have some questions from people, and I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit now and make you prove your expertise. But first question here. My grandmother had arthritis, which caused her fingers to be misshapen and twisted. Does psoriatic arthritis cause that? And a lot of people will be familiar with those big knuckles and those sort of lateral deviations of fingers and things. Is that the case, Doug?
It can, yes. And not so much nowadays, because the treatments do prevent the damage. And so if you get on the treatment early enough, you can prevent a lot of that, if you like, disability and that deformity that occurs. So we don't see it as much nowadays, but it certainly can happen. So it's one of the reasons why we say to people, you know, do get in there.
Yeah,
get
the impact of hands, never mind misshapen hands, but hands that don't function properly.
Absolutely.
That is a disability. That's, yes, that's incredibly difficult for people. Does heat help the condition? I love this. Should I go on sun holidays more often?
I had a very famous patient who gave an interview to the paper, said I advised him to go to Spain, but I didn't. It varies. Again, that's an individual thing. Some people find the heat helps. Some find the heat actually makes them worse and they're better in a sort of cooler climate. So it's a very individual
thing. Did you ever notice, Eamon, any of those things?
I don't think so, no. I don't think so. Like, it could be the middle of winter or the middle of summer and I would have
the
a flare
flares
up.
Were different.
Yeah, it never made a difference to me.
I think the other thing is that people, when they're away, if you think about when you go to Spain, for example, on holiday, you're on a holiday, so you're not doing your normal activities and you're also probably more relaxed when you're on a holiday.
No stress,
despite
resting.
Even, you know, if you take the weather out of it. So, you know, that has an impact.
It's amazing all the complex interactions. Yeah. My toes have become swollen with it and my toenails are very brittle. Will going on treatment fix that?
Yes. Yeah, the medication is very effective at reducing the swelling of the toes and also improving the nail quality. So a lot of people think they've got a fungus, a fungal infection of the nails, because that's the commonest cause of that sort of discoloration that you see of the nails. But in fact, a lot of the time it's due to psoriasis.
I was told, in addition to seeing a rheumatologist, I should also see a pain specialist to manage my psoriatic arthritis. Is that always necessary, or sometimes necessary?
Sometimes necessary. We would say, you know, if the pain is due to the inflammation and the inflammation is treated with the correct treatment, then the pain will disappear. As in, I think Eamon mentioned that his pain almost totally disappeared with the treatment that he went on. But I guess it depends. You know, not all pains are due to the psoriatic arthritis. So,
and could it be that if damage was already done to joints and there was pain that wasn't due to acute inflammation that was still ongoing, that's not going to necessarily respond? So
that's right. It may be due to the damage that's occurred or accrued. Yeah.
You obviously dodged that bullet, which is a good
thing. And believe it or not, I only had an injection in my wrist maybe a year and a half ago. So I think, like what you've just said there and touched on, the damage is already done.
Little bit.
And so I still have wrist problem that I think won't be, you know, is now a pain that will something I have to deal with. Like,
okay.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry to hear that. My arthritis means I find it difficult to walk far or fast. This must be the classic conundrum for people with all forms of arthritis. How can I avoid weight gain when mobility is my challenge?
Sometimes, you know, basically to start small. So, you know, short walks. Walking isn't the only form of exercise as well. So maybe if walking is difficult to do other forms, so it could be swimming, cycling, non-weight bearing. A lot of people tell us as well, you know, even going to your pool and walking in the pool, because, or even doing gentle exercise in the pool, because obviously the water it gives you takes a bit of the weight off the joints. So that can be a really good way, and certainly that's something that people would report to us. That's
and
positive.
You would echo that, Doug?
Absolutely, yeah. And even actually, I would say, you know, start off with just, you know, stretching exercises. by starting at the very beginning, start with stretching or something like mild yoga or Pilates, just to actually get you into the experience and then move on to.
I think it's probably fair to say as well that diet plays a role insofar as that I know as a GP, I had this very conversation multiple times with people. And we used to say, look, people in wheelchairs can lose weight if you exercise dietary control. And a lot about weight loss is maybe 70% diet, 30% exercise. So no one ever wants to kind of exercise the portion control and all those things. I think that's fair to say. But sometimes that has to be looked at.
The biggest factor in weight loss is actually what you eat.
Yeah.
And how much you eat.
Yeah. And if you aren't very mobile, you may not require as much as you'd like, shall we say. And that's difficult for people too. Is swimming a good exercise?
Yes.
Full stop.
If you swim, there's lots of people who don't swim. Mm. Yeah, okay. Although I think after the lockdown.
Yeah. I've had some people as well come to us and one of the things they would say is that where they went to their class and maybe a lot of us, I'd be one of those, I call myself a bit of an Irish swimmer where I learnt and my stroke wouldn't be great. So a lot of people have gone and maybe just got some advice on their...
An Irish
their
swimmer.
Technique. I like that. I think their technique.
I too.
Which
am
helps
an Irish
them. Which helps them to be able to swim for exercise and also ensure that, you know, for example, they're not, just correcting the technique basically. Yeah. I think. Really
but
helps.
You don't have to swim either. You know, aqua aerobics. Yeah. Lots of people really get you know because the heat of the water as well as the buoyancy.
Yeah, helps. Taking the weight
and
off.
The other thing is, you know, with aqua aerobics, you're often in a class, and so there's other people.
Nice socializing.
Yeah. And there may be other arthritis sufferers and I know a lot of...
I'm glad you mentioned it because if you are going to a pool and you have maybe, as some people do, quite dramatic skin manifestations of psoriasis, that can be an issue for people because people are self-conscious.
Yeah. And a lot of people would mention that they wouldn't want to, you know, or they've never been to a pool
and
because
people can
of
make
their psoriasis. Yeah.
Unkind remarks.
Mm. Yeah, and it's very important. I think that you know, we often say this to patients with psoriasis: it's not infectious. You know, it's not an infectious disease. You know, so people can't catch psoriasis from somebody with psoriasis. Mm. So it's really important.
I've been told that massage helps the pain. Is that correct? It seems counterintuitive. I suppose that somebody's saying that they're stiff and they don't know that they want to be touched. But does it help?
Yeah, I think massage can help, certainly. And I mean, I wouldn't be saying to do it all the time or, you know, go down that road only.
Yeah.
But certainly if you have painful muscles and painful joints, it certainly can help, yeah.
Diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis, and I'm wondering if it's something that could be passed to my children.
There is quite a significant genetic element in psoriasis. It's less so in psoriatic arthritis. So that the gene is stronger for psoriasis than it is for the arthritis. But it's not often directly transmitted.
I suppose you said your brother had psoriasis. So
yeah, it was one of the factors in getting diagnosed.
One of the familial things. And on to our final quick fire round, which all the pressure is on you, Doug. But myth busting, because there are a lot of myths and misunderstandings and stuff. So only in older people, arthritis? Only in older people?
Absolutely not. Yeah, we've seen kids as young as 2 months, babies as young as 2 months can get arthritis.
That's very harsh. Yeah. It is an inevitability as we age.
No.
Nope.
No, there's lots of people who age without arthritis.
I look forward to that. Exercise, I think we've knocked this one on the head already, but people do think this. Exercise is bad for arthritis?
No.
Nope.
Exercise is good.
And there's more arthritis in Ireland. I've heard people say this a lot because of our bad weather.
Yeah, I think that's a real myth, actually. My grandmother used to tell me that rheumatism.
The rheumatic conditions flare up in the cold.
Yeah. No, nope.
None of that. Knuckle cracking, I tell this to my children just to stop them doing it because it's horrible. Knuckle cracking causes arthritis?
No.
I'm still going to tell them. There's nothing you can do to help arthritis.
Absolutely not. There's so many things you can do. There's things that people can do to help themselves, but there's also lots of people out there, doctors, nurses, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, who can actually help.
It only impacts the joints.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
No. And all arthritis is the same.
No, there's 200 different types of arthritis and... They all vary in many ways.
This is why you have to be a professor to understand all of this.
Yeah, it's, it's the importance of seeing a doctor and I think getting a right diagnosis. And I think Eamon touched on this earlier, the correct diagnosis. It does help you manage your arthritis yourself, you know.
And osteoarthritis is the same as inflammatory arthritis?
No, no. Osteoarthritis is the most common form of arthritis, but it's very different from inflammatory.
It's the kind of the
arthritis.
Wear and tear arthritis,
that's,
isn't it?
That's right. That's what we often say, wear and tear.
Everyone with psoriatic arthritis has the same symptoms?
No. No.
I love how emphatic you are. Yeah. No! I thought we covered this earlier.
Absolutely
no.
Not.
Yeah. And you can cure it with diet?
No.
No, sadly no. There is a test, a single test to diagnose it?
Yeah, unfortunately not. And that's one of the reasons why there's such a delay often in making the diagnosis. Not only because different patients will present with different features, but also there is no single test. There's no blood test that you can do quickly that sort of says, oh, this is it. And that's why it's difficult if patients don't have psoriasis or they have the arthritis before they develop the psoriasis. It can be a tricky diagnosis to make.
Look, my sincere thanks to you, Eamon, to Gráinne and to Doug for joining us today. And we hope that was informative and engaging for you. And thank you for joining us. This is our fourth and final episode in the series Beyond Expectations. So let's talk psoriasis. We hope it was useful and informative for you out there listening. We'd love to keep the conversation going online using the hashtag. So let's talk psoriasis. PSO is how we spell. So I'm Dr. Ciara Kelly, and we're delighted to have you on board for this series, and all the series continue to be available online.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during the So Let's Talk Psoriasis podcast and video series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of Janssen Sciences Ireland UC. The primary purpose of this series is to educate and inform and is not a substitute for professional diagnosis or treatment. This series is supported by funding from Janssen Sciences Ireland UC.